Holly Rowe at Sports Siren on Twitter. If you don't already follow her, you should be doing so. Yesterday, we talked a lot about the passing of legendary coaches, Buddy Ryan, and of course, Pat Summitt. We catch up with Holly today. Holly, how are you?
I'm good. I'm a little blue, to be honest. It's been a hard few days.
So, Pat Summitt, it's hard. I want to be honest here. It's hard for people who have not been as close to the sport of women's basketball to, I think, really understand the impact that Pat Summitt had on that game. But when you look at her accomplishments and you look at what she was able to do, even if you do it, you know, after the fact, she was not only important to women's basketball, but to the sport of basketball, period.
Yeah, you know, one of the things when I very first started covering Coach Summitt, like in 1998, I think, we were back in Virginia Beach, Virginia, doing a regional final in the NCAA tournament. And the variety of people that would line up on the stairs going up from the, you know, court, I mean, hundreds of people lining up to see Pat and talk to her and shake her hand. And it was like this cross-section of life. It was like young, maybe 18 to 25-year-old African-American males. It was older women. It was young women. It was older men. It was, I mean, I was just struck by all the different types of people that were fascinated by Coach Summitt. I mean, she just had total credibility with every group of people that were interested in basketball.
Do you know why that is? Is it easy for you to pin down why she was so relevant to people of every different walk of life?
I've really tried to think about it and put it into words, and the best I can come up with is that she was the first woman that we really saw on TV coaching like that. Back in the 80s and early 90s, we didn't see a lot of women's sports on TV, period, unless it was the Olympics. So we didn't see a lot of coaches and a lot of female coaching figures. And here she comes onto the scene. Some of her games were the first televised women's basketball games. And her demeanor, her persona, the way she was stomping around, you know, I think she caught people's attention. This fierce woman in a suit and high heels, demanding it of people, but then kind of folksy and fun. She was just interesting. And I just think she caught people's attention.
In America, obviously, we love winners, right? I mean, and she was so incredibly successful. Is she more of a player's coach or one of these people that I guess is just a tactician? You know, we see both kinds have success in basketball and every other sport. How would you define Pat Summitt in the way that she approached that?
I think she was the perfect blend. Is I have rarely seen in coaching someone be harder on their players and be more demanding. You know, in this generation, people are getting lawsuits and investigations and stuff if you're too hard on your players. Well, she was brutal. I mean, she would look you in the face. I saw her get right up close in people's faces and demand that they go out and do what she was asking. And yet she is beloved by those players because the way she was off the court and how supportive and engaging and loving is, she might have been the perfect blend of both. And then, as far as a tactician, you know, I feel super lucky because I was in her huddles, pretty much I was the main sideline reporter for about the last 10 years that would get to be in her huddles in the championship moments. And I'm listening to her change plays, call plays, set up strategies. And I mean, there were several times being in her huddle that I just got chills because what she said was so impactful. And then it would change the course of the game and they would come back. I remember one time they were down by 10 with just over 5 minutes to play in a game. And what she said in that huddle changed the game. They came back and beat North Carolina and went into the national championship game. So I just think she was the perfect blend of all of those things.
You obviously have a very interesting and unique role in covering sports. How well were you able to get to know Coach Summitt, well, outside of the coaching role, just the person?
Really well. You know, part of her charm, and I think why so many people are just so in love with her and sad at her death, is she was so inviting. So, like, she would share recipes with me. I make one of her recipes of jalapeno corn. She calls it jalapeno instead of jalapeno. so I make that for my family every Thanksgiving. And every time I would go to Knoxville for a college football game, I would go and visit Coach at her house. So, you know, I was raised Mormon, so I have very limited drinking experience. And I go to her house, and her neighbor brings over Tennessee Orange moonshine in a mason jar. And so Coach Summit and I drank some moonshine in her kitchen and laughed so hard. You know, like just these precious moments that I can't ever make up or share with people because they're just too fabulous. I remember one time I got contacts when I was about 43 years old. Well, you can't teach an old dog new tricks putting in contact lenses. So I was at Coach's house, and I was telling her how hard it was to learn how to put these contact lenses in. So she takes me into her bathroom and gets a pair of, you know, several pairs of her contact lenses out. And she coaches me up on how to put the contacts in my eyes. And I just, I've had these precious moments. We once went on a road trip. I drove her to one of her players' championship games for 6 hours. And she was whistling in the car, singing along to Bad Mama Jamma. I mean, we've just had some times and these really private, kind of fun, personal moments that I just am so grateful for.
Holly Rowe is my guest here on the O'Connell and Swinney Show, talking about the late, great Pat Summit, who obviously we got the news passed away yesterday at the age of 64. Her biggest legacy, if you have to pin it down to one thing, what is it?
It's the young women's lives that she touched. So it wasn't, she coached, I think it was 161 players, and every single player she ever coached that went to Tennessee graduated. Out of 161, 74, so almost half, have gone into being college coaches.
Wow.
So think about that. And not just that, but people like me, people that, you know, knew her peripherally that didn't play for her, that she has had a major impact on our lives. And, I mean, it's tens of 20s of thousands of people that knew her and were friends with her and loved her. And her impact is going to be the lasting legacy of how she treated people.
Her longevity is something that we're not going to see in coaching anymore, I don't think, right? At 38 years at Tennessee, do coaches now have the opportunity even to be as impactful and to establish the kind of legacies that someone like Pat Summit does because of the business and because it's win at all costs and because of that, and we're not going to see many four-decade tenures ever again?
Well, I don't think we'll see that many tenures because she started when she was 22 years old, and not many 22-year-olds are getting head coaching jobs anymore. So that's just a fact. But I do think there's a lot of really good young coaches out there that can have an impact. You know, I've been kind of raised with, I don't know if I want to say backward attitudes or not, but I don't always stand up for what's right for women. I've always been kind of one of the guys and just try to fit in this male-dominated business. So sometimes I get mad at myself for not being stronger about that. But like Pat Summit gets offered the head basketball coaching job for men at Tennessee, and she turns it down because she's like, that's not a step up. You know, I just think that is so interesting that to her, she was at the big time. She was coaching at the very highest level in her mind and stood up for everything, you know, demanded bigger locker rooms, demanded fair treatment for her players. I don't know if we have that many pioneers left that will have the courage and, you know, not be swayed by social media or public opinion to stand up for what's right and make a unique stand.
Holly, how do we improve that? Like you said, you work in a very male-dominated business. We here, even at ESPN 700 in Salt Lake, are sometimes part of that problem. I talked about this with the kind of the rise of Ronda Rousey when everyone was talking about how impressive and dominant her run was and how important it was for women. But then the immediate narrative after that was, yeah, but could she beat a guy? And, you know, I've got sisters and nieces, and I was like, no, it's stupid to ask her to do something like that. You don't have to validate her accomplishments by putting her in competition against men. She's the best female athlete in the world right now besides Serena Williams. And it's like a weird tendency where we always want more from female athletes. Like
no,
Billie
yeah,
Jean
I
King
know.
Had
no,
to be a guy.
Like, no, what it is we want to compare them to men. And, you know, women and men are different. We're different creatures. I don't understand the obsession that, you know, sometimes you'll have a really good UConn women's basketball team. They'll say, well, could they beat a guy's team?
Right.
They're different games. They're totally different games. We're different species. You know, like, I just get exhausted of this constant comparison by that. It's okay to be the best woman out there. It's okay to be the best man out there. I mean, there's a lot of things LeBron couldn't do that some of the best female athletes. Now, LeBron couldn't go and be a female gymnast and do a kick-ass bar routine and beam routine, you know?
Yeah.
So let's celebrate the individuality of people and athletes instead of, you know, I love men more than anything, but I don't feel the constant need to compare myself to them. I'm different.
Yeah. So is that how we fix it? We just say the comparisons are invalid and they don't need to exist anymore. In basketball, I understand why people have the tendency because both men and women play the game of basketball, right? But it's something that when a pioneer like this, when an icon like this passes away, it makes even people like me reflect on, well, am I being fair in the way that I treat female athletes, talk about female athletes, even think about female athletes? And I think that comparison, that whether it's a natural tendency or it's a social construct, is something that at least I need to get rid of.
I love that word you just used. It's a social construct. It's how it's always been, and so we just kind of fall into it. Bill Plaschke from the LA Times, I don't know if you'll have time to read this, but he wrote a fascinating article today about, and he apologized for not covering women's sports more fairly. If he had a choice to go to a WNBA game between two undefeated teams or kind of rehash a press conference of Luke Walton being introduced as the LA Lakers coach that had already been announced and been done for like a month and a half. And he chose to cover the men's event, which was a boring event, predestined, already done, instead of going to this kick-ass women's basketball game between two perfect teams that went down to the last shot, a three-pointer to win it at the buzzer. So I guess, you know, people don't follow women's sports as much because they don't get the coverage. Well, if they got the same coverage the men's sports got, maybe people would be more interested in the women's sports and follow the women's sports. So it's kind of a weird catch-22. But I do think we can do better. There are some amazing, amazing stories with female athletes that just don't ever get told because I think we in the media do a poor job of bringing them to light. You know, I've seen a lot of journalists, especially a lot of female journalists, kind of start out at ESPN and other companies, and they're doing women's sports to kind of get their foot in the door. And then as soon as they kind of make it big in their minds, they quit covering women's sports, and that drives me nuts. So I have a great passion for women's sports. I cover a ton of women's sports, volleyball, softball, WNBA, college basketball, because it's important to me. I think there's just as many good stories there as in the men's sports.
Yeah, I did see that Bill Plaschke piece because of your Twitter account. You retweeted it, and I'll do the same. But it's interesting because it's something that I guess we have to look at, and it's a shame that the death of someone so important to the world of sports is what makes us kind of introspective when it comes to how we treat female athletes. But
I think it's good. It drives conversation, and that's exactly what Pat Summitt would want. And I think that's a beautiful part of her passing is that it makes people look at why was she so beloved? Why was she so successful? If she built things and did things no one else has done because she thought differently about female athletes. And I love that we're having this conversation and we can all learn from it.
I'm a Minnesota Lynx guy myself, so I wasn't happy with the Sparks victory. I'll tell you that.
Oh, I know. I'm doing Minnesota next Tuesday. So we have a game there on Tuesday. So I love that team. They are so good.
Holly, we always love talking to you. Thanks for taking the time. Are you gonna get a chance to check out Pac-12 Media Days at all?
Yeah, I will head out to Pac-12 Media Days. I can't believe how early it is. It's in just a few weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I am going to go to Knoxville. They're having a big service for Coach Summitt. So I'm going to fly down and pay my respects and celebrate her life. So got a busy July and then college football right around the corner.
Yeah, well, we'll see you down there in L.A. for Media Days. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me on, and thanks for thinking about this stuff. I love that. I love your discussion today. Thank you.